the centralized socialism in, you know, in the 20th century, capitalism was a sort of a doctrinal. It was what you call a one-shoe-fits-all. Like, whereas in centralized socialism, it was central planning that became the doctrine. Capitalism, it was the market above everything else. So it's no wonder that, you know, when you try to impose doctrines on reality, in respecting reality, you would have this collapse. So just like the Eastern European collapse in the you know, in the 20th century, you have had this major collapse of a system that was based on very, very little regulation of the market. So I am not surprised this is what happens. This is what happens when doctrinaires, ideologues, try to impose things on reality. And what we're seeing is the rebellion of nature, the rebellion of social reality that is taking place. I think that is the essence of what has been happening in the last few months. And, of course, one of the major problems here, or one of the major areas where you witness a loss of credibility and a loss of legitimacy, has been in the area of global governance, as represented by the IMF, the World Bank, and the World Trade Organization. So I think that's my sense of why you have had this crisis that has now overtaken the whole world. And I think that one of the lessons that people will draw from this is that, you know, basically they will become much more pragmatic. That you have to have a positive and healthy relationship between the market and, you know, the state. And, you know, that what is important is, you know, a great degree of transparency as well as a great degree of democracy in the running of our economies. And, of course, we shouldn't let doctrine blind us as to the way, you know, that we arrange our economic institutions. So I think that out of this twin collapses, the collapse in the 20th century of centralized socialism and now the collapse of neoliberal capitalism, I think the lessons people will draw from it is, in fact, to respect social reality.
Mm-hmm. Before this global collapse, when the agenda was especially among those that wished, at least in the spoken word, to help the so-called third world, they believed the microcredits were something that could be of great help to the world and to the better life of the poor in India, in Bangladesh, and in other countries. Why are also, in your opinion, microcredits just an illusion? It's just supporting the same old system.
Well, yes, microcredit was, you know, basically, you know, it, you know, in terms of assisting, you know, the poor, in terms of making sure that the poor would not, in fact, you know, suffer greatly, I think microcredit had its uses, you know, but this was a stopgap measure. Now, the problem is that some people, including the founder of the microcredit movement, the Grameen Bank kind of model, began to see it as the salvation of the world. And in fact, that's not the case. I mean, you know, microcredit may help prevent people from falling into poverty, but it's not the kind of thing that will bring about, you know, large-scale development. I think what you need there is, you know, planning. I think you need tremendous investments, and I think you need a healthy sort of relationship between the leadership role of the state as well as the users of the market. And that, you know, we see this as, you know, that's the kind of large-scale approach that you really need to be able to solve the problems of crisis and under development. But above everything else, I think, and I would just like to emphasize this, you have to have economic democracy as a guiding tool of the economy. So, in other words, I think that what we're saying here is that the problems of the world cannot be solved by microcredit. And to think that that's possible, I think, is to fall into a delusion.
Dr. Bello, we are present, at present, we see that there is, or at least there is a tendency towards a shift in the power of the hegemonical power of America. We had a bilateral system, and now we have states, especially mm-hmm. South America, which are showing ever more individuality and their backbone towards the international community and what they demand for their own countries and people. But do you think that this changes, well, where do you see that, where do you think that the shift is going towards, how is the global power going to be exchanged in the future, and do you think these new elites are also are more ready to look at the problem as it is and not through the eyes of a certain ideology and then be ready to solve the problems considering the ideology and not the problem itself?
Yes, well, definitely I think that the U.S. has diminished power. I think, you know, we're seeing, you know, a situation whereby the U.S. economy has collapsed. And before the U.S. can regain its economic footing. So, you know, the U.S. as the engine of the world economy because of middle-class consumerism and spending, that time is over. I mean, you have a highly indebted economy, and it will take years and years to work out that debt. At the same time, I think that this does not necessarily translate into a more powerful position for China, because as we know, China was very much dependent on the U.S. market, and now the Chinese economy is also unraveling precisely because of the unraveling of the U.S. market on which it was closely tied. So, you know, you have this kind of a model of export-oriented industrialization serving the U.S. market that China followed that is now falling apart. And I think China will also enter into crisis, just like many other economies that premised their growth on serving this market, Japan, are also in crisis at this point in time. So we're really talking about a systemic crisis in which the key powers or the key forces are all greatly seeing their economic power diminish. Now, you talk about Latin America, I think that here there's a great deal of potential that we see because a number of the countries like Chavez in Venezuela, the government of Korea and Ecuador, Evo Morales, they're banding together, making regional cooperation and regional markets serve as the engine of their development. And I think that this is the way they're going, and I think that they will loosen their dependence on the United States, and they will also loosen the hold that the United States has on them. So I think that kind of more regionally oriented development is also something that other parts of the world can begin to look at. It seems like this globalization, this idea of integrated global markets, that is already past. And what we now see is a period of deglobalization. And I think that economies that work around regional markets rather than the global market are, in fact, going to be the wave of the future. So that's my comments on that situation.
Mm-hmm. Could I also ask you for a comment? A couple of months ago, there was an interview at the BBC with a former ambassador to the United Nations from Singapore, and there was a discussion on the workers' rights and human rights and the like in Southeast Asia and in the West. And the Singapore said that the amount of the human rights, the level of human rights and of workers' rights is always is continuously rising in Southeast Asia as well as in China, while in the West, as we know, human rights as well as workers' rights are getting more narrowly defined and are diminishing. What's your comment on that? Do you agree with him, with this position?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what he meant, because I think, you know, what the East Asian industrialization was based on was really suppressing workers' rights and restricting organizing. And I think that that made labor very cheap here, as opposed to, you know, labor in you know, other countries. So I think what the Singaporean government, the Chinese government, and many Asian governments did was, in fact, to artificially keep the price of labor down. And because of that, they succeeded in, you know, in industrializing their countries and attracting foreign investment. So I think that what's going to happen now, I think, is that now that export-oriented industrialization no longer works, now that economies have to refocus on the domestic market, they need to redistribute income. And I think that what's going to happen is that necessarily this will have to involve giving labor more rights to organize and giving it more, you know, giving it a larger part of the income pie. And so I think in the future we are going to see emerge a greater respect for both rural and urban labor that will emerge in the region. However, my disagreement with the person from Singapore is that that's not yet happening. It will, that's more in the future, you know, rather than at the present.
So what you were just saying is a very sane thing and reasonable thing to do, but is this your just your belief that this will happen in the future, or are there any practical evidences of this already happening?
Well, as I said, if you're going to focus on making your domestic market the engine of growth, you'll have to redistribute income, and that will, you know, that will also mean, you know, that you know, that that rights of organizing will you know, also be taken, will have to be given to labor. So I think that of course there will be practical political obstacles to this, and some countries more than others will take it up. Authoritarian governments like Singapore, which are used to controlling labor, will probably be the countries that will find it most difficult to yield this kind of democratic rights to workers, as will the government of China. I think the Chinese government may be willing to redistribute income, but I don't think it's going to be willing to grant rights of labor organizing to labor. But, you know, we'll have an uneven process of labor democratization in East Asia and the world.
Dr. Bello, you've been attending World Social Forums throughout the from the first year till now, and you've also attended the one in Brazil at the beginning of this month. What can you say, what has happened with the development of World Social Forum, and how successful is it in placing the agenda as the agenda of the entire world and not just...
Well, I think it's fairly clear that the World Social Forum was, you know, a very, very important site for critiquing, for criticizing, for exposing the illusions of globalization and exposing the kind of big inequalities that it created, as well as the fact that it was corporations and financial institutions that benefited mainly from globalization. Now I think the forum needs to take much more seriously the fact that it must become a site for the elaborating alternatives to neoliberal capitalism, as alternatives that would promote democratic control of the economy. And I think that whereas in the first objective of exposing globalization, the WSF did very well, I think in the area of articulating alternatives to the current system, it has not done as well. And I think that that's going to be the big task of the future.
Dr. Bello, what could you say should be the framework for every person in thinking of how the future should look like?
Well, if I may just put it in one word, deglobalization, meaning that we really need to reorient our economies from these global markets and global production systems in which if we're tightly integrated to it, we all fall together at the same time, and this is happening right now. So I think we need to revive local markets, revive domestic demand, refocus economic on local markets, and push for sustainable, environmentally friendly development strategies, and above all, to democratize control of our economies. I think, these are the key points of reorientation, I would say, of our economic thinking.
So you also think that, therefore, different places would have different systems, considering the needs in that place and in that community? A more heterogeneous and not a homogeneous system as exists today.
Sure. I think that we have common values. There are common universal values, the importance of community, the importance of solidarity, the importance of democracy and justice. But exactly how, we put this together into concrete economic priorities and systems, that will really depend on each society. So, there are common principles of alternative economics, but the way that they're concretely put together will differ from one society to another. And I think that this diversity should be respected, and that we should not have this one big model, just like the IMF neoliberal model, imposed on all society. And as a result, you have a rebellion of society and a rebellion of nature that we're now seeing happening. So I think diversity is really important, because diversity is something that we see in nature. To try to eliminate it and impose a kind of a moral counter on it, the violation of